Hello, and welcome to the Place-Based Methodologies at UTS podcast series. I am Ilaria Vanni, and I'm here with Dr. Clancy Wilmot from Manchester University in the Department of Geography. Hello.
Hello.
Clancy.
Hello.
Welcome, and I will start with a question which is both very simple and very difficult, which is how you understand place in your research.
Place, okay. I think probably I'll give an answer that's also at once very simple and very difficult. I understand place as an entanglement, and so what I mean by suggesting that place is an entanglement is that it's a coming together of multiple different kinds of forces or processes. And so in that we might think about people, and along with those sort of social, cultural, economic, political kinds of ideas, the material. So not just in terms of landscape, but also in terms of processes like weather, smells, sights, the sensory, and understanding in that the material does have a life beyond a human construction as well, that there are certain kinds of processes. We might also talk about animals, we might talk about pasts and histories, we might talk about cultures, institutions, resistances. So it's, for me, place is very much about an entanglement between these different kinds of forces and the way in which they come together to express themselves in particular moments.
In your research, how do you go about studying this entanglement in terms of methodologies that and methods that you use?
I tend to use experimental methods. So depending on what kinds of ideas I'm trying to look at and what kinds of theories I'm working with, I tend to change methods a fair bit. And so before, in the past, I've used walking interviews recorded with action cameras, for instance. I've used participatory interviews, archival methods, digital methods as well, or experimental digital methods, so looking at different ways of processing digital data, using GPS as well. So it's a combination of visual, ethnographic, and archival methods as they might appear in digital systems.
And would you have a definition for these methodologies?
In the past, I've just called it simply experimental methods, and specifically philosophically experimental methods. So hinged on these methods is a way that if you can choose methods that help to think through ideas, it's possible to actually discover philosophy in the everyday. It's possible to actually discover that ideas, whether it's about place or space or culture, can emerge through the engagement with the empirical world. It's just a question of designing the right tools and the right processes in order to try and capture and illuminate that, or hide it as the case may be.
And so could you tell us how you do it step by step?
Step by step. So I tend to start with an idea or a theory, basically. So in the past, I've worked with Foucault, and Foucault has a very particular way in which he understands what we might understand as place and the way in which language and discourse have come to structure things like memory and the body. Or I've also used theorists such as Donna Haraway, and this idea of kinship between people and ecologies and materialities. Similarly, used Doreen Massey's work on space, or Avery Gordon on haunting. So you start with this kind of theoretical idea and you unpick, well, what is the actual question here? What can't I answer by myself? What do I need to go into the field and actually discover? And once you get this kind of theoretical framework, you then think about, well, what kinds of data can I capture? And I think all too easily we kind of link back to perhaps more traditional methods, not because they're always the best methods to think about something, but because they're the easiest methods, because they're the ones that we've known. And so if you're going to do interviews, think, well, if I'm thinking about power, how can I actually use the method itself to really untangle this notion? So it's not just in the information that you might get, but actually in the method itself. If you're interested in sensory kinds of experiences, well, how do you use your method to really unpack that? And so in the past, when I've used video recorded walking interviews, there's sort of a whole range of questions that come up. Who gets to decide what route we walk along? Who wears the camera? How do you deal with that data? How do you understand it, etc.? And what I found was really interesting about doing that was that the action camera itself became a tool to really critique research positionality and the possibility of capturing all the data of the world so that it can be cohered. And so the framing of the shot, the fact that you can't see what the camera's filming, I decided to wear the camera as a researcher because I was talking about kind of post-colonialism and landscapes to reinforce that this was my gaze in the end. It was my gaze that was kind of being pushed here. And similarly, in the way that I process that data rather than traditionally coding it as one might normally with an interview using coding methods, I actually did a form of note-taking and did sort of three ways of thinking about interactions. I didn't transcribe either. I wasn't interested in transcribing, and actually I used much more of a storytelling mode of presenting that data as a way to speak back against, you know, this project was largely about post-colonial knowledge and rationalist sort of constructions of knowledge, and it felt disingenuous to the philosophy of the project to actually then go and do a method that was contradictory to the claims that I was making. So I think when you're doing experimental methods, whether that's using, I've used digital video to analyze darkness and lightness in video forms before, using Apple Watches to critique sort of embodiments, sensors, all these kinds of tools, is that, you know, you kind of get this question of what can you know and what can't you know as well. I think that's really important. So that's always an important stage. And then I think you finally get past the collection stage where you've gone out and you collect some data. You then analyze it, and there's different ways that you can analyze it as well, and even where data itself might not work. So I had one incident with an action camera where it didn't record, but the GPS data did record. And the whole project was about temporality and rhythm, and actually it turns out with some GPS data you can make some beautiful maps around rhythms and changes in speed. And so because it recorded our speed, I could actually show this sort of wave map of us speeding up and slowing down and different ways of expressing that data. So think creatively as well about, well, what can you do with that data, and then how can you present it as well that stays true to that philosophical origin of the project? You know, if you are concerned about the biopolitical, then try and resist through what you do, critique. Similarly, if you're interested in kinships, make kinships, write kinships as well. So I think that's how I do it, step by step.
And can you tell us something more specific about the technologies that you use, like what camera did you choose and why, and what kind of GPS app do you use, and so on?
I like to choose things that people already use, so things that are quite cheap, if at all possible. I think knowledge isn't always expert, and so I kind of like it when particular devices don't quite work as well. I think it tells you something as well with these kinds of moments of glitch or failure. So for the action camera, I use a Sony action camera, put it on standard definition. The reason I use the action camera is because I've got a steady shot technology which stops the wobble of an action camera. Although I do know that the GoPro has recently addressed issues they had with that. For wearables, I use the Apple Watch, basically because we're interested in the hype. And needless to say, it didn't particularly live up to the hype, which was interesting in of itself. Its heartbeat data was quite strange, to say the least, and had me convinced that I was having a heart attack half the time, which was less than ideal. I've also used, you know, again, most of the methods I use can be done, you know, on a personal computer with freely available software or trial software. So, you know, the analysis of the Luma on a piece of video I just did through a trial download of Final Cut Pro, but could be done pretty much in any high quality video software. You could probably even do it in iMovie. Basically the technologies that I've used have been largely lay people technologies. The action camera is not the high end, people using phones as well. Phone cameras are actually quite high quality these days as well. And I'm not interested so much in presenting a beautiful photographic or visual project. I'm interested more in sort of critiquing the limits of knowledge and representation. So for me, just cheap, whatever works, whatever's popular.
And what kind of understanding of place do you get using these methodologies and technologies?
For me, what was actually most pertinent is that, in a way, through not being able to capture everything, there being a limit to what we can represent and know, it actually becomes clear that which is unsayable, that those elements of place which are not necessarily explicable, what Foucault might call a subjugated knowledge or below the level of erudition. So when I was doing the walking interviews, lots of people would refer to ideas around, you know, or like this, or you know how it is, or it's kind of like that, or they'd make hand movements or gestures to try and express something. And often they were trying to express the same things. Often they would work in metaphor as well. So people would talk about the idea that the sky is being bigger, or kangaroos make certain noises, or flowers bloom and then stop blooming, etc. And so you kind of can find connections that perhaps you would miss in that particular moment, but that actually kind of, if you see them together, that in their heterogeneity, they give this sense of place that is really complex, that is highly contextual, that is situated, if you want to use a term that Donna Haraway uses, and that in a way is much more akin, I think, to kind of the way in which Doreen Massey expresses space, but rather than being a space of always constant open potential, place in the sense it's entanglement of all that potential together, that briefly comes together at a place in a moment, and that actually has or expresses a critical potential as well. It expresses whether that's in memory, in nostalgia, in hope, in dreaming, in distance, but actually kind of expresses that. So there's this critical entanglement.
So if your students or my students would want to use this approach, would you have any advice for them?
Yeah, I think I always tell my students that there are three levels to doing empirical research, and they're all equally important, and they're all absolutely necessary. And that's theory, methodology, and method. And often it's easy enough in many ways to read through and think through theory. And it's easy enough in many ways to do a step-by-step kind of idea of method. What do we do? How do we go out? How do we collect that data? But it's in the sort of space of methodology that really that comes to life, and you transform from being a sort of distant critic of other people's work into a creator of your own research, and that you have to articulate how doing certain kinds of research might reflect those theoretical aims, but they also have to be, you have to be able to go out and gather information. And how do you measure? How do you classify if you want to do that? How do you map? How do you draw? How do you untangle? How do you burst open or rupture? So, you know, it is this sort of, this process of having these three ideas of theory, methodology, and method. And methodology is perhaps much more tricky than you might think that it is, because it requires a fair bit of creativity and a fair bit of bravery as well, in staking claims and putting in hope, maybe it'll work this way, and courage in knowing that even if it doesn't work, you'll have something at the end, and you'll at least have a story of failure, and in itself that is generative and that is productive. Like, it's important to report and to understand that the field itself is not, you know, a tame space that is curatable, but it will speak back to you, and it's your job as a researcher to help that have meaning.
And so what are your favorite texts that you would recommend?
So on methodology, I think I always recognize there's a book by Linda Tuohy Smith called Decolonizing Methodologies, which is a fantastic one. It's designed for sort of research in settler colonial, post-colonial sort of spaces, but I think in terms of doing all research, given that the world is peppered with inequality, or the terrain of the world is uneven, that this is actually a book that should be a much more general reading. I often recommend John Law's work on meths, sort of after method, and he does give a few sort of philosophical directions for thinking through what happens when things get really messy and don't work, and you've kind of got yourself into a bit of a knot. And I'm often, again, methodologically inspired by Paul Feyerabend's After Method, but there's actually a much better, I think, approach to this kind of conceptualization of method in an edited collection of, I think it's called Non-Representational Methodologies, edited by Phil Vanini, but there's a piece by Erin Manning in there called After Method. And she takes a sort of a much more gentle approach to this question of method as this need to have strict answers, but actually instead how we can think about life beyond just sort of the repetition. And then if you want basic method stuff, I mean, the canon. So Rose's visual methodologies, Sarah Pink's visual ethnographies and sensory ethnographies. And I think these are good texts, but you need those methodological texts to actually go through. And if you want to be a bit braver and think about creating your own methods, then Celia Lurie and Nina Wakefield edited a really brilliant collection called Inventive Methods, which has a different, like a whole range of different kind of method-based tools that you can use to think about how you might sort your data. So if that's number, category, anecdote, pattern, set. So there's a speculation as well, the speculative. And that's a really strong collection for those who are looking to kind of think outside the box.
Thank you. And to conclude, would you like to make an example from your research?
In terms of?
Of, researching place.
Researching place. I think my whole research is an example of researching place in some ways. I think perhaps one of the cautionary tales I would have, which is also a tale of hope and potential, is that often you set yourself up with these ideas around theories, as I did. I read a lot of Foucauldian thought, and you come to expect the world will be a certain way, and that when you have developed your method and you go out into the field, you collect the data and come back, and it's going to all behave itself and do what you want, and that, you know, these theorists that people cite all the time that are sort of canonical, often men, absolutely know what they're talking about, and you could apply their work for centuries to come. And so I tended to make this mistake. So I sort of went out there and expected to find us all embroiled in discursive structures, and there'd be no hope, no way out of language. It would be sort of a net that we'd all be caught in. And actually speaking with people, because people are absolutely unpredictable, it sort of became clear throughout that actually this approach wasn't really enough, because as it turns out, there are all these moments for hope and potential. And so I think the field is this vital space that always, and people that you research with and spaces that you go to, they always talk back to you. They always resist or fight with you or entangle themselves. And I think when you go out and you do research, I think it's important to be prepared for that and to accept that. Don't fight it. Don't try and make it neat. If it's messy, think, well, why is it messy? And then actually, in the end, I ended up having to write another chapter that I did not expect to write, about haunting and the kind of beyond representational and that which can't be said but absolutely spurns people into political actions, and this feeling of ghosts and this feeling of disquiet and disconcertment. And so I think for me, that was probably one of the most valuable parts of the research, was actually being proven wrong by the world. And I think for a researcher, it's important to have the humility to accept that.
Thank you very much, Clancy. Excellent.